Last week we were discussing step 8. We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. We've been going through the 12-step process here on Recovery Now. We've had a lot of discussion about planning and changing the mindset, and now we are ready to spring into action. Step 9, we made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And Reverend Dr. Dan Geeting, now we got some heavy lifting to do this week, and I know that you have a lot of perspectives on this.
Well, maybe not as many perspectives as I do have questions that I'm very interested in, but I just am always fascinated with the 12 steps in reverse, that if you don't catch what the 12 steps are moving forward, look at the reverse and you get the message. And in step 9, it says, I got even whenever possible, except when to do so would further injure me. And I think
Dan, that's self-awareness.
That's self-awareness. That's right. And it's that me-ism again that so shines through in addiction.
Okay, you said you've got questions? Well, I think I have a source for some answers. Jim is a counselor at the Lawrence Center, which is affiliated with Waukesha Memorial Hospital and Pro Health. And Jim, you were with us last week and kind of set the stage, and now we're on an action plan here. And Dan, fire away.
Okay. When we were on last week, I really appreciated how you sort of gave an avenue of how these steps weave together. And the thing that we were talking at before the program was how much action that it happens. It's just not wannabe, wish to be, analysis paralysis, but you were just saying that really step 9 is people step up to the plate. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think stepping up to the plate is a great description. I think that the wording in the step implies action. We make direct amends. And a direct amend means that you're making eye contact with the person that you've identified in your 8th step and going about making your amend. Making direct amends means that you are engaging that person equally in this process. It is not just a me thing. It is also about the other person. That's why we do these things directly and in person. It says in the step, making the amends whenever possible. I'd like to reflect on that a little bit. Sometimes a direct amend may not be possible by virtue of someone has passed on.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the recovering person may feel a need to make an amend. Sometimes that can come out in a counseling session where the problem is identified. But what's missing still is that connection with the other person about whom they may feel guilt, about something that they did that hurt that other person. So the process works equally well for the recovering person, even when their identified person has passed on. An example is perhaps writing out their script and going to perhaps the gravesite and reading that amend to that person. Some people choose to go and make that trip and leave the amend at the gravesite. That's another possibility. I'll give you an example from my own experience, if you like.
Yes, that'd be great.
Okay. When my brother passed away from cancer, he was 19 and I was 17. And I think, as pretty typical among adolescents, there were fights, there were quarrels, and there were things that had not been resolved. So when I got into a recovery process, I recognized that there was some unfinished business here. And even though it was some 15 years later, my brother's best friend and myself hit on a way to make our amends, because my friend, who I also will relate another story about later, also had amends to make. So what we did is we bought a commemorative brick for him, and it's in place now at O'Donnell Park in Milwaukee. And we wrote a loving message to my brother and had that installed. And so that was our amend. That was as direct as we could make it, and it was something that's lasting, and it's still there today.
Mm-hmm. What a wonderful symbolism that you could have in a tangible way for you to see, but also to place it there for eternity. And an affirmation of love, and I'm sure that brought a lot of healing and that. And you know, there's another aspect that when we can't do it whenever possible in those places that we can't, but then also there are times that some people want to make amends, and this is sort of what you talked about last week, was that maybe they're making the amend more for their own self-forgiveness and feeling good. It says, when to do so would injure them or others, except when to do so. Can you address some of those circumstances or issues that you would say that sometimes this needs to be left in the hands of God? Would that help you with the part, except when to do so would injure them or others? I know I was in a treatment center, and they had a family week, and the person wanted to dump on, right in the family week, an affair and all these things. And I remember that counselor coming back, you know, we want you to be honest, but this is really going to tear everything up, and maybe it speaks more to the timing that you'd already had mentioned, and that. And I was even thinking of a previous program when the person found out in treatment that they wanted to leave and go live with somebody else, and all the trauma that it just seemed like it came out at an opportune and not a redemptive time, and wasn't a redemptive response. And maybe you could speak to that aspect of it as a counselor, and what you maybe see, and how do we work through this issue when you might have a dangling participle, and that. So I'll just turn it over to you right now.
And I would say to that restitution is not payback. Restitution means an honest appraisal of those we had harmed, and then a willingness to make that amend to that person. Whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others, means just that. It means that we need to be honest, but brutal honesty really doesn't serve much purpose. So we need to watch our motivation. When we work this step, we need to be respectful of the other person, their experience, and their feelings in that process. Because, for an example, for many people in their drug addiction, there may have been theft, stealing money from their parents, for instance. So we get to step 9, and we're thinking about making amends to our parents because we recognize that there's still tension, there's still anxiety in that relationship between these people. We want to make restitution, but we don't have to get into a knockdown dragout about every single time we used. No, we simply go and say, here's my track record. My intention is that this will not happen again. Here's the money that I owe you. I love you. Thanks for being my parents, etc.
And with that also, I think that I really like that fact that you have a truth, but you have grace in there. It's a journeying of grace, and I'm always reminded from my theological background of talking about the Christ. When Christ came, he said he came with truth and grace, not just brutal honesty, without knowing how to cushion and ease it in, that it's a healing truth versus a destructive truth.
I see a little, you know, the step seven and step eight, or step eight and nine kind of going together. You know, backing up, in eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all, made direct amends whenever possible. So when you have that moment where that direct amends isn't possible, what are some of the ways, you had mentioned the commemorative brick and reading something at the gravesite, but this person lives two blocks away, or maybe you see them. There's always that tension that's going to be going on. How do you deal with that?
I think I have an example for you, Ned. A while ago, we had a vet, Vietnam War vet, who came through the Lawrence Center, and because of his wartime experience and partly because of the person he was, he really lashed out at authority. When he came back to the States, he got into trouble with the police. And he had actually harmed some people on the police force when he was under the influence. But he was in a really good place after all these things had happened, and he was ready, truly ready, to make right these wrongs. Now, he really couldn't go to the police station and come to them with an eighth step, because had he done that, he would have harmed himself. Mm-hmm. He probably would have brought up a lot of things for people on the police force. So what he did, he wrote a letter. And he wrote the letter while he was in treatment, stating what happened, stating his remorse, and he mailed that letter directly to the police station. And I believe that it was well received. I don't think that they often get letters like that. And it served a dual purpose. I believe that it helped them, and it definitely helped the gentleman that was at the Lawrence Center, because he was able to clear the decks, so to speak.
And just the guts and the honesty to receive a letter like that, because all of us can look at our own lives. And when you have to confront a truth or make an amend, how difficult it is to say, I really am sorry. I really, you know, this is not my intention again. Sort of that contract, I'm not going down that road anymore. And yet it calls forth so much of character and character building. And I think that is really powerful.
I can see, though, where somebody would have the fear of rejection here when you're making that direct amends. And how do you get over the fear of the possible rejection? You know, I got my list. I got my appointments. I don't think I'm ready to go out the door and do it yet. How do you deal with that?
I think you give it time.
Mm-hmm.
And you check your readiness and you check your willingness. And if it's really not there yet, and if you're not holding up because you're afraid that it may actually harm that person or someone else, then you just check your willingness, check your readiness. If you're not ready to go, you're not ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a lot about timing here. There's a lot about timing, and I think again, as I talked about last week, people tend to want to rush these steps.
Mm-hmm.
They want to get this finished.
Mm-hmm.
After all, it's the last of the house cleaning steps. Let's get it done. But sometimes waiting for that right moment makes a huge difference for both parties.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that perspective. I had not heard that timing aspect was so important. And when a lot of times people enter into recovery, and you can read the steps at meetings. When you go to meetings, you read the steps and, oh yeah, I'm on this or I'm on that step, or, well, no, I'm addressing that step. And with this timing and preparation and this action step, how do you see the Friends of Bill W. assisting people on this journey, that as they are waiting for the right time, what do you see as the thing that some of the components maybe that strengthen them, give them a sense of inner oughtness or an oughtness to hold back? Where does those friends of Bill W. come in to that journey of recovery as people are on these steps?
They may be able to help the person that's working the eighth and ninth step understand whether or not their list is complete. They may be able to help them understand that this is not an egocentric activity, that a lot of this has to do with how the other person will receive the amend. I've heard people give the advice before they set out on their ninth step to actually call the person that they'd like to make an amend to and ask if it would be okay if they stopped by and shared some of their experience with them that they would like to make an amend. And that can pave the way in some cases. And it can also tell someone that, you know, maybe they're not ready yet, so we're going to hold off on that part of the ninth step. Those are some of the things that I've heard in meetings.
And I think that kind of information frees a person up from this guilt of I have to do something and releases that so the time can take place in a natural way and can, like you said, move into it at the right time, but not feeling, oh, I'm not doing my part in recovery, and sort of become a 12-step hypochondriac. Have I done this at the certain time and the right time? I think one of the things that I really appreciated about you being on the program is your personhood and your transparency. And one of the things that it brings to mind in my life is that before I met 12-step people in the 1980s, I had no clue about really 12-step programs, and we can all have caricatures of them. But when you really meet a recovering person that is working the steps, I feel like I've discovered the jewels of living. And 12-step people, to me, have given me so many gifts, I think, of integrity, learning how to look at themselves, and tools that many people that, as some have expressed themselves as grateful alcoholics, because if they're bottoming out, birthed them into a way of living that was happy, it was joyous, and it was freeing.
One of the things that I include in my presentations to people in treatment at the Lawrence Center is if you were to take a look at this and put your addiction aside for a moment and insert human condition, and this 12-step process being a way to wholeness, you know, it just being a part of the human condition. And getting back to the amends, though, I see this as a wonderful opportunity for the one who has been offended to be given an opportunity to forgive the one who is offended. When that amend has come, and the therapeutic value of forgiveness in that exchange and the restoration of the relationship that results. But I say if you don't make the amend, the other person is robbed of that opportunity to forgive, even though they may not have even thought about it.
And also in that fact of going to that person, it really shows respect and honoring the personhood of that person. And that's powerful to get that affirmation, and really would help that person also to embrace their worth.
Is it often the case that someone makes the phone call, as you said, Jim, and I'd like to make amends to you? And is it often the case that this is like a mano a mano, or would a sponsor go along, or would this be done within a group of people? What's the best way to do it?
I would say one-on-one would be the ideal. I think in my experience, I have worked a ninth step with my parents. However, only because they were together throughout a lot of the issues that led up to working that ninth step. So, but generally speaking, you would look at this as an individual endeavor. You are in a way catapulted into this by virtue of your support that you've developed in AA, and so now you're ready to go out, break away from that a little bit, and make these amends. It's a humbling experience. It's meant to be. It's part of the ego deflation, and it's part of getting ready to work with other alcoholics. So it's a vital step.
So if someone sees this whole process as being a form of humiliation, they don't get it.
Probably not. It's meant to be humbling. Mm-hmm. And it is humbling. However, as anyone can tell you that has a little bit of humility on board, it's a very freeing situation. Who doesn't want to be rid of the part of the ego that drags one down? Mm-hmm. Well, here we go. Here's step 8 and 9 for you. Ticket to freedom.
Oh, that's, I like beautiful. That ticket to freedom.
Beautiful.
You know, there's I just love the biblical parallels that go along with mm-hmm. this. You know, you mm-hmm. give up yourself, and that's how you discover yourself. That's how you find yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, step number 8, you know, and you know, making the list, and then step 9, making direct amends. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you feel maybe we ought to mention here?
I would like to say that I don't think that there's any wrong that's been so great that an 8th and 9th step can't, at least in part, bring some healing to. So if you are out there and you're sitting with the idea of making an amend to someone that perhaps you really harmed, I would say continue with that thought and continue with that desire to make these things right, because I've seen things overcome in my years at the Lawrence Center and in the program myself that are pretty amazing. You have it within you to make these changes, and try not to be afraid to do that. And trust the other person, too, to help you along with that process.
And I think that is so beautiful. And if somebody is struggling, I would say get into a 12-step meeting and help have somebody journey with you in that, to share your heart and to share your fears and maybe help with that waiting time and that preparation.
I have to ask you this. You go on to the internet and you Google non-12-step recovery, and you get this wealth of websites out there saying 12-step don't work. Your reaction to that?
Well, I think that it does work. I've seen it work. It's not a theory. It's an action program that does work. Some would rather have a secular program, and there are some nice avenues to investigate along those lines. I think it's commonly called cognitive behavioral therapy, or smart recovery. I wouldn't let that deter you from looking into this program. I think you should be open-minded, try to be open-minded and investigate all the things that are available. If you're seeking to stop using alcohol and drugs, then be open-minded.
We've had an interesting couple of weeks, and especially getting a little insight into the healing and the restitution that comes with these steps number 8 and 9. And Jim, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and next week, as I am reminded by Debbie's the producer of this show. Next week, we're going to be talking about hope. We had been looking into the Celebrate Recovery. That comes out of Saddleback Church. But we're kind of taking a look at the subject matters that they're going after, and we talked a little bit about denial and powerless, and now we're going to be talking about hope, especially as it relates to this 12-step process. And Dan, I'll look forward to you know, talking to you about that, because you get the, you know, I say hope and your eyes light up.
I love that word, hope.
Dan, thank you so much. The word hope is what it's all about, because as you journey through the tunnel, as that self-awareness piece really comes to fruition as you go through the steps and you understand yourself and how you react and you understand your place in the world, it is a journey to wholeness, and the 12 steps do work because it's about who am I and what am I doing and how, and do I understand myself or not? So next week, hope, and this has been Recovery Now. I'm Ned Wicker reminding you that you can get this on drug-addiction-support.org or at alcoholism-support.org or on your iTunes selection, and there are many other ways you can get it. And if you would like to check us out, we'd love to hear from you. Questions, comments, it's all good. Until next week, this is Ned Wicker. God bless you, and we'll see you again.